Poland, things that come to mind, not a whole lot, no.
Poland, probably not a whole lot. Polish sausage.
No, I don't know anything about that country.
Poland, sausages.
Pierogies.
Is that it? We hope it's not. That's what we're going to try to show you.
Welcome to Polcast.
Hi, this is Małgorzata Bonikowska, your host, and you're listening to episode 97 of Polcast, recorded and produced by me in Toronto. Long time no hear, my apologies. When I was flying to Poland in January, I was extremely excited and planned recording many interesting interviews for you. There were so many ideas, so many plans, but unfortunately, a vile virus, which no doctor could diagnose, ruined all these plans. And instead of fun 3 weeks, I spent 4 weeks in Poland, unable to fly on the scheduled date. Then it took longer than normal to recover, but here I am, better late than never, with my new episode of Polcast for you, which I hope you will find really interesting. At the beginning of my trip to Poland, I finally did what I had been dreaming of for, well, you don't want to know how many years. I went to Kraków. Whenever I go to Poland, I stay in my hometown, Warsaw. No time to travel, too much to do, but this time I said, no, I gotta go. It was an amazing visit to this very special place that Kraków has always been, but trust me, now it's just magical. That's a separate story, though. Also, as my listeners know, Polish-Jewish issues have always been close to my heart. In Kraków, after a long walk around the historic Jewish district of Kazimierz, I sat down with Michael Rubenfeld, a Canadian Jewish theater artist, writer, director, actor, and producer, whom I knew from Canada and interviewed several times. For example, in episode 20, when we discussed his unforgettable play, We Keep Coming Back, about his and his mother's first visit to Poland, where his family roots are. The latest interview that I did with Michael was part of my Tribute to Ukraine series on Polcast. Michael, already living in Kraków, through his theater festival called Festivalt, organized an Aid for Ukraine through Art campaign. Yes, you heard it right. Michael now lives in Kraków with his wife and young son Liv. And he does what he did in Canada, theater. There aren't many Jewish Canadians who settle in Poland for good, so this conversation was really intriguing. Michael shared with me his experience and thoughts, how this happened and why, how it feels after 8 years, how life in Poland differs from life in Canada, and what it's like to do theater in Poland. Take a listen. How did you get to Poland and stay? We met in Canada. You were a Canadian Jewish artist based in Canada, and remember your first production, We Keep Coming Back, so unclear how you feel about Poland, and now you live here.
Yeah, I do live here.
Yeah, how did this happen?
Well, it started with my play. It started with We Keep Coming Back because we grew up with such a negative narrative about Poland, always. And I had this feeling that we were born in Auschwitz or something, because my grandmother was an Auschwitz survivor. And anytime we talked about Poland, it was always in the negative. And it wasn't just our family. So we grew up with such a negative narrative about Poland, like all Jews in the world do. And at the time, I was making theater, and I didn't like working with actors. And so I wanted to work with my mother, because I liked to work on things that I didn't know the answers to. And so I liked to make a show to see if I could come up with a solution. And the solution I was trying to solve was how to get closer to my mother, because We had a hard relationship. I felt very kind of separate from her. But I also felt separate from this place that we were from, Poland.
At that time, she had never been to Poland either.
Yeah, my mother had never been to Poland.
Right.
Neither of us had been to Poland. And I had this feeling that I would go at some point to see the camps, like all Jews. It's kind of like their duty to go to Poland, to the concentration camps. And so I asked my mother basically to come to Poland with me in order to mourn something. She agreed. But there was also a desire to see if we could build some kind of concrete relationship with Poland that wasn't just rooted in our brains.
Based on your own experience rather than stories.
Yes, to see if we can find something maybe more positive and how that might affect our relationship. Because our relationship was tricky.
And it did.
It did. But I mean, you know, I now live in Poland, and so she might sort of regret ever having said yes to doing the play.
Has she visited you?
Yeah. We did the play in Poland several times. She loved it here. She was just here in the summer.
From just coming to Poland for a while to staying in Poland, I mean, that's a big step. Yeah. You remember when you made the decision to actually settle here for good?
You know, I met my wife, my now wife.
You guys met in Poland?
We met in Montreal at a Limud conference, which is actually the organization that she works for now. But we met in Montreal, and we started dating. It was this crazy long-distance relationship. She was living in Warsaw. I was living in Toronto. She would come to Toronto. I'd come to Poland. And eventually, we decided that we wanted to get married, but we couldn't maintain this crazy lifestyle. We had to choose a country. You know, we thought that we might try and do both countries. We're looking at property in Canada and property in Poland. And we thought, okay, we'll buy a place in Toronto and we'll buy a place in Poland. And then we realized we couldn't afford that. And also, what we could afford to buy in Toronto versus what we could afford to buy in Poland was radically different. And so that was part of it. But also, the other part was that our relationship just made more sense in Poland. We both felt this connection to Poland. My wife had already begun working in Jewish culture in Poland, and in particular, the kind of rebuilding of Jewish culture in Poland. And through my wife and through spending time in Poland and engaging with the fact that Jewish culture was being rebuilt, was being revived in Poland, I felt very inspired. And I think I felt very inspired to even get more involved in my own Jewish identity politic, because I never was able to access it through Israel. I had too many barriers in my relationship to Israel, mainly around the politics in Palestine. I didn't feel like Israel was my place.
So that was never an option, right? You guys never considered moving to Israel and building a life there?
No, because for Magda, like, interestingly enough, her entry point into Poland was through Jewishness. She converted to Judaism, but she never felt a connection to Poland until she found Jewishness. And I never felt a connection to Jewishness, really, until I found Polishness. So in a way, this is the reason that it made a lot of sense for me to move to Poland, because it just felt much more meaningful, and our relationship felt more meaningful. And, you know, even the idea of raising a child who would be a Jew and a Pole in Poland, who would have the Polish language, this thing that my grandparents had but I lost. We'd love for him to learn Yiddish and Hebrew, of course. For now, he's bilingual in Polish and in English. So there's a kind of return in the nature of our relationship. It's a kind of like return to something that was lost. So we recognize that we're also operating as symbols and storytellers. But I'm a storyteller. It's what I do for a living. And so the story that we're telling is far more interesting. No one's going to sit and put a telephone in front of my face and ask me to tell this story. And what I like about it is that it allows me to tell the story through me as a kind of vessel. But I feel like I'm a vessel for a story that is not only my own. It's many, many, many different people's stories.
You've been here 8 years already.
I've been here for 8 years.
That's
already
a long, long time.
Yeah.
In the meantime, your son was born, who is now five.
Now five, left.
Okay. Now, and you're staying here. That's the plan?
Narazie.
Yeah, you learned the language, which is amazing.
Tak, mówię po polsku teraz.
No świetnie.
Ale mój poziom jest około B1, ale coraz lepiej, ale bo pracuję teraz w teatrze w Polsce. I nie mówią po angielsku.
So basically, Polish is your choice because it's, I mean, you have to communicate with your actors.
When I first moved, I had a lot of work outside of Poland. And so I had like one foot working professionally through the organization that I run with Magda, with my wife. But I was doing a lot outside of Poland. But then once COVID hit, I couldn't travel around. And so I had to commit. And I had to understand what my life was going to be now in Poland, because I couldn't go anywhere.
So what is it like?
Well, I work in theater. You know, I've always been a theater artist and a theater producer. And basically, I had to figure out how to be a theater artist in Poland. And I was fortunate enough that a director named Marcin Wierzchowski saw We Keep Coming Back. And he was very moved by it. And he got in touch with me. And we started to meet. And we just started to have conversations. He, as a Catholic Pole, thinking about the war, pre-war, and Jewishness, Polishness, and me as a Jew in my context. And he's a theater director, and at a certain point, we both sort of thought, maybe we should make a show together. And at the time, because I don't know anybody, I didn't grow up here, so I don't know, we just had a conversation. We just sort of started as friends, we decided to make a show, and then I discovered that he's actually a pretty well-known theater director in Poland, which was fortunate. There's lots of theaters in Poland all over the place. And he gets invited to make shows often, like all over the country. And he always works with a writing collaborator. And so it was great. And so he invited me to make a show with him, and we went to Poznan. We made a show called Altaheim, Stary Dom. It's called Altaheim, which means old home, mm-hmm. and Stary Dom. It's basically a show about a Polish family who had grown up with one very particular narrative about their great uncle who tried to save a Jewish family during the war, and the family and he was all murdered. In the show, my character, I also act in the play. I play an American Jew. I show up to this family reunion. One of the siblings has invited me because they met me in America, because I tracked them down, because I read an article about their family. And it turns out that the story that their family has is the same story that my family had, but it was told to me through my grandmother. And what we discovered is that all of the Jews were not murdered. One of the Jews survived, but nobody knows because there was no survivors. So that Jew survived, made their way to America, and I'm the grandson. And I've shown up basically to say, hey, thank you. Your great uncle saved my grandmother's life. And of course, that sort of starts this whole kind of rediscovery of the narrative of that family. And then you start to find out that, in fact, the still-living patriarch of the family, who was the brother of the great-uncle who was killed, was actually responsible for all of their deaths.
It's quite dramatic.
Very dramatic.
So you've staged it where?
We've staged it at the Teatro Nowe in Poznan. It's been running for 2 years. We did it in Krakow only once during a festival called Bosco Comedia.
You should come back.
It's not so easy. I mean, when you make a show in Poland, the way that it works is that it's the show of the theater that you've made it in. We work. There's 13 people in the show. We made it at Teatro Nowe in Poznan. They paid for it all. They own the show.
Yes.
And we're a part of their repertory. And so the only way to travel with the show is if it goes to a festival.
Yeah.
Or, you know, someone else wants to. And so it's a big show. You know, I've been trying to get it to Canada.
Yeah, how about that?
You know.
There's no money.
It's just money. Yeah, it's just about
how much
money.
Does it cost to bring it to Canada?
Ugh.
Not that I can pay for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's not even about paying for it. It's about, like, somebody wanting to put it on. Do you need a theater, which costs the money? The thing is that we can get funding in Poland to bring it. I tried to get some big festivals to take it. A big festival has to really want to program it.
Okay.
We really want to make it a film. That's what we'd like to do. We need producers and supporters.
Producers.
Yeah, like we need help to do it. I think Marcin is the director. Marcin would like to direct it, and I would perform in it as well.
So now you are in Krakow, that's where you work.
I mean, I work at the festival that I run. Which
tell us about the festival. Festival.
So it's an organization that we started first as a small festival, mostly out of our apartment, because we felt that there was an absence in the way Jewish culture was being represented in Krakow and in Poland in general through an art context. Everyone's doing Jewish stuff, not just the Jewish Culture Festival, but the JCC, Galicia Jewish Museum, and we wanted to do it then, and also because the Jewish Culture Festival is not run by Jews. It's run by non-Jews. We're not against that, but their focus tends to be on the kind of celebration of Jewish culture. And we felt like, as Jews, that it was also important to have a Jewish lens, programming art, and like Jews deciding on the way that their culture is also being represented through an artistic lens. And our purview was more critical. So although we celebrate Jewish culture, we wanted to speak towards the complications of Jewishness in a Polish context. And so that's how we began. And first we thought, okay, and let's see if there's interest and a desire and a need. And we discovered there's a huge desire and a huge need. And through that, because our focus had always been on the quote-unquote problems, the things that we felt needed to be worked on, you know, we ultimately started to evolve our work, taking it into an activist realm, into like a capital A activist realm. And so some of our projects, for example, have initiated partnerships with the city, even on two occasions. We've initiated partnerships through the city. Like I did a project called The Lucky Jew, which was a comment on the Jew with coins that are sold.
Yeah.
That developed into a partnership with the city.
It has been banned, right?
I mean, it's banned. Yeah, if you are caught selling them on city property, you get a 20,000 zloty fine. Sometimes our projects are not even public facing, like they're just sort of research based or activist based. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're just conversation based. During the 10 days of our festival, it's primarily art and some conversation. But, you know, but throughout the year, we also do conferences. We've just initiated a Polish Jewish artists network, for example. And we also have a partnership with Pauline and Paul Szechny in Warsaw on an artist residency program that takes place either in Krakow or in Pauline or in Paul Szechny or sometimes all three. Mm-hmm. So we've become, I would say, one of the most important Jewish arts and activist organizations in the country, I think.
Is there like a community, like a Jewish community in Krakow that, you know, you guys know each other, you work together?
People know each other. They don't work well together.
No.
Krakow, it's a huge problem in Krakow. There's a lot of division in Krakow. It's not good. And there's some really...
And you mean arts or general?
No, not. It's not just about art. I mean, there's no art. We are the art scene in Krakow. Like, there's the Jewish Culture Festival, and they do their Jewish... But the Jewish Culture Festival, their focus is not on the development of Jewish artists in Poland. Their focus is on mostly importing Jewish artists from mostly Israel now, because the head of that festival is obsessed with Israel, shows the people of Poland the artists that he loves. And that's what he does. And they're great artists often. But our focus is on building a local Polish Jewish arts scene. It's like a small shtetl, like it's a small village. And people have their kingdoms, and they don't like to collaborate. Jewish organizations. You know, like the Jewish Culture Festival is not Jewish people, but it's Jewish culture. There's the Jewish Community Center, which is some Jews and non-Jews. There's the official Jewish community. There's us. And then, you know, there are some organizations that have been incredibly collaborative, and that's what they feel they're there for, like the Galicia Jewish Museum, very collaborative space. That was under the former director. There's a new director. Don't know how that will go.
Is that something that you're a little disappointed with? That's not what you were hoping for? In our Polish mind, you know, all the Jews work together, and we never work together.
It's there's a joke about, like, two Jews get stuck on an island. Like, although there's only two of them, they each need to build their own synagogue because they would never step foot in the other person's synagogue. It's actually a very Jewish thing. There's lots of fighting. You know, like, Polish fighting and Jewish fighting. I feel like Jews are like Poles and Poles are like Jews sometimes, because there's a lot of drama and unnecessary fighting. Being collaborative, it's hard. Like, you've got to be the kind of person who's really, truly interested in not being the one in charge. Like, I think a lot of people, they want to be the one who has the say. And it's not so easy to not kind of be like that. And there are some places that are doing good work, but they're not necessarily interested in being collaborative. Mm-hmm. They want things to happen their way, and if you want to work with them, it has to be their way. We're not like that as an organization.
Yeah. So how do you see the differences between living and working in Canada, doing arts, and in Poland?
They're huge. I mean, I can't talk to the arts because I work in theater. I can talk about theater. There's a very particular system in Poland of how theater happens. As far as I understand, it's a system that began during communism. There's a huge difference because in Canada, there's theaters and everyone is freelance except for like the artistic director and the people who work at the theater. So the director is freelance, all of the actors are freelance, and the writer is freelance. So they decide on first the play that they're going to produce in a theater in Canada, and then they hire the director who's going to direct that play, and then they do auditions, and all of the actors are hired. The play runs for 5 weeks, or, you know, 2 weeks, whatever, and then it's gone forever from that theater, unless the theater decides to bring it back. And that's how things work. So you're constantly hustling for, like, what's your next gig? What's your next gig? In Poland, it works completely differently. The Polish theaters have acting companies. They're all employees. So the only ones who are freelance are the directors. And so a director is hired to come to the theater and work with that specific acting company. And that acting company performs in all of the plays. And the plays don't run for just 5 weeks and go away. They are rehearsed, then they're opened for their premiere, which is 3 to 5 performances, then they go into the repertory. And the plays exist, usually for a minimum of 3 to 4 years in that repertory. And in some cases, like Lupo's got a show that's been running for 30 years, right? And this, to me, was a miracle. Yeah, for me, I find it miraculous, because making a new play is a lot of work. It's very hard, and you never do it like for the money, because there's not a lot of money in theater. Theater is not lucrative. And so you have to think about, so what is the value proposition in the theater? And in Poland, I think the value proposition is so much greater, because you work very hard to make something, but the conversation that you want to have with your artwork, it doesn't evaporate after 5 weeks. So I made a play in Poznan, very meaningful for me, and it's been running for 2 years already. I made another play in Katowice. Also, it's been running for a year, and they're both successful plays. This is the other thing, a successful play in Canada, doesn't matter if it's successful, they might extend for a couple of weeks, but then it's gone. But the fact that my shows are successful means that they're going to be around at least 5 years, which is crazy. Like, my shows just are still running for 5 years. It means people can continue to come and see my work. And now I'm working at the Stade, making another new show. And that will run also for several years. So suddenly, I've made 3 shows in 3 years with Marcin. And they'll all be running at the same time. And it means, because they're running, that there's also this space for a theater culture to be created. Because how do you create a culture when a show sticks around for 5 weeks and then it's gone? In Toronto, for example, where there's 5 million people, they're all so busy. The theater is 4 times the price of seeing a movie. What's going to get somebody into a theater in Toronto? There's one reviewer, a couple reviewers. No one cares about the reviews. It's what people talk about. But there's no opportunity to actually say, hey, I saw this show, you should go and see it. Because by the time that conversation might happen, the show's already closed and it's over. So in Poland, cultures are created around shows. And there's a real incentive for theater artists to stay in the theater, because they become important in the context of the fabric of Polish society. Whereas theater artists, there's no space, there's no time for theater artists to become important.
Why can't this be changed?
There's a union, the Canadian Actors Equity Association, that all actors have to be a part of, has been built all around a colonial system that the British imported to Canada. Mm-hmm. So that's the system. I mean, because that's how things work in the UK. But the UK is a whole different thing, though. You know, like, you have major theaters in London. The theater culture is old and important in Shakespeare. And this, we don't have, like, our culture in Canada started in the 60s. We don't have history to prop up Canadian culture. I've thought about this endlessly because I'm so clear about this now. It's like, there's no history. Canadians don't have the history to attract them or to seduce them into, like, into the value of what this culture is. So no one cares about theater. People don't care about it. In Poland, they care about it because there's history, but also because when you're in school learning about shows, you can go and see them. You're not always, you don't have to just, like, read them. But, you know, in order to change it, there's a whole series of reasons. Like, theaters are run by boards of directors. They run kind of like businesses. And the majority of the people on a board are people who understand money. They don't necessarily understand art. So yeah, you have to first convince a board of directors that this is a good idea, and they have no idea. And then also there's, like, you'd have to convinced the arts councils who are putting money into the theaters that this is a good idea. And then the union would have to create a way for this to work within the context of the union. It's just there's so many obstacles.
But how does the union stand in the way of making this?
There are minimum amounts of money that you have to pay people per week. So in Poland, you are paid a certain base salary, but you're not paid extra for rehearsals. You're paid extra only for an individual performance. And this is also partly what makes it affordable. In Canada, if you're hired as an actor, you're paid the same fee per week of rehearsal as you are per week of performance. And it's too expensive. It's not equitable. It's not possible. So what you would have to do if you were going to create acting companies, you'd have to be able to pay them less as a base salary. And they wouldn't be paid extra for rehearsals. They would be paid extra for performances. But that's a completely different system. You'd need a real person coming in and decide that they're going to really rock things. I personally love it. I love that I...
That is an extremely prestigious theater.
Yeah.
So what are you working on there?
We're making a show called Time Shelter. It's a very loose adaptation of a book by a Bulgarian writer named Georgi Gospodinov. Mm-hmm. He won the International Booker Prize this year. And it is about a clinic that has opened for Alzheimer's patients. And the clinic has multiple levels, and each level is a different period of history. So the idea is that because Alzheimer's patients have a very difficult time short-term memory, but not long-term memory, that they are given the opportunity to live permanently in a period of history that they have memories in. So it's a way of creating a space for them to live normal lives. And that's the kind of premise of the context of the play. But then within it, for us, it's ultimately an examination of how Poland became the way it is. And it takes place in two of these periods. It takes place in the present, because we're never in the actual past, but it takes place in the present. It takes place in between 79 and 82, like the beginning of Solidarity, and in 68, and before the war. It's basically looking at how memory operates and how we become who we are. And it's very Polish. This is the other thing about making theater in Poland. When you look out into the audience, it's almost 100% Polish people with the same histories. But in Canada, who's in the audience? It's everyone. So it's much
different. I guess it has to be much more universal things that you say to your audience in Canada, unless you touch upon Canadian things.
It's hard.
Is there anti-Semitism in Poland? Do you feel in any way uncomfortable?
There is anti-Semitism in Poland, but it's not dangerous anti-Semitism. I think of it as like stupid anti-Semitism or ignorant anti-Semitism. You know, Poland is incredibly homogenous, and in general, I think the kind of relationship to cultural sensitivity is not the strongest in Poland. And so people don't necessarily understand even what that means or why it might be a problem to be a bit racist in the kinds of jokes that people are telling or the way that language operates. So, you know, the word Żyd or Żydek, just the different variations of the word Żyd has taken on a negative connotation in Poland. But when people say, you know, you're a Jew, the word Żyd means Jew, when somebody says it, they're not necessarily talking about actual Jews. They're just sort of using the word Jew as an insult. So this is how anti-Semitism works. There's people who tell Jewish jokes, and it's odd. People will say things to me like, you're my favorite Jew, which is a compliment, but the way that kind of culture is framed here means that people become othered quite quickly. Whereas in Canada, I'm not used to it. People aren't like, oh, you're my favorite Pole. Like no one thinks about other people's cultures the way that it happens here. So it's weird, you know? And then there's things like the Jew with the coin. And it's not understood as something that is anti-Semitic. Or we have another project about the fact there were like Christmas nativity scenes in that the Krakow Museum had been putting on this Christmas nativity scene. And in it, there was like a racist image of a Jew and like a Jew being beaten, just like crazy stuff for children. But, you know, even like at the city level, it's just tradition. So they don't necessarily recognize that as being problematic. So we had a whole project through Festivalt about it, where we basically called them out and said like, hey, this is a problem. And everyone was like, oh, we're so surprised. We've been doing it for so long. It was like, that's a problem. We just didn't notice. So it exists. It's in the kind of fabric. But, you know, right now is a crazy time for Jewishness in the world. And I feel safer in Poland than I do anywhere else in the world. I would choose this kind of anti-Semitism in Poland versus the anti-Semitism that's developing in dangerous ways in other parts of the world, even in Canada.
So the stuff that you started with when you started working on your We Keep Coming Back, you said there were all these negative opinions and there was like the stereotype of what Poland is all about. With your own experience, you don't think that's right?
I mean, there's so much that's wrong in terms of the narrative that we have, that Jews have around Poland. Like, on a very basic level, we just don't know anything about Poland and what the reality was for Polish people during the war. I think people thought that Poles were very happy to collaborate with Germans, which is now something I understand is completely crazy because, you know, Poland was invaded. There were people who did bad things, but not as many as Jewish people like to believe. There were people who did good things, but not as many as Polish people would like to believe. The reality is most people were just trying to survive because, you know, to save a Jew meant risking your whole family's life, your children's life. And if I knew that saving someone meant risking the life of my son, I don't know what I would do. And I think that this is something that people don't contemplate accurately, that Polish people were quite helpless themselves. And, you know, and it's war. War brings out the best and the worst in people. Not only that, like the Germans got rid of a lot of the intellectual class. They managed to kind of get rid of anyone who they felt would become adversarial in like serious, dangerous ways, intellectuals.
So if you were to go to Canada now, today, and if somebody said, okay, Michael, tell us how it really is. Are we right in what we keep saying, right? Because, I mean, we know that there's a negative narrative. Would you stand in front of them and say, you really guys should reconsider some things or not?
Always. I mean, so people had to ask me why I moved to Poland. What's hard about Poland for me as a Jew is that the history is hard. It's painful. So much was lost here. But in terms of Polish people, I mean, Polish people are amazing. I love Polish people, and the country is amazing, and it's a fascinating, engaging place. I would never, ever tell someone to, like, stay away from Poland because of the people, because people here are very intelligent, very engaged. Of course, not everyone, but, you know, in what country are they? But I don't find people to be generally anti-Semitic. I think that it's the opposite. I find there to be actually a lot of philo-Semitism, which is the opposite of anti-Semitism, a lot of interest. The reality is that, like, Poland's 30 years post-communism, and so any kind of judgment on what Poland was pre-war, I mean, yeah, after Piłsudski's death, it was bad. There were problems in Poland. It was an anti-Semitic place. And then the war happened. Whoever is making judgments about contemporary Poland based on what Poland was before the war or during the war, it makes no sense. It was 80 years ago. And then there's 40 years of communism, 30 years of post-communism, intellectual work, academic work, memory work, Jews, non-Jews working on things. And it's impossible to say that Poland is a bad place for Jewish people. It's not. I think it's a fantastic place for Jewish people. It's just a sad place, too, because there were 3.5 million Jews, and now there's 100,000. That's hard.
And now at the end, this is an introductory piece to Michael's new project, which he has been developing successfully for a few months now.
I am a Canadian living now in Krakow, Poland. Been here for about 7 years.
I made the decision to move here for, you know, a number of reasons. My wife is Polish, but also my family's roots are here. My family were Jews from Poland, and they survived. Those who survived made their way to Canada, where I was born. And I grew up with this really negative narrative about Poland. And when I started coming here, I discovered that actually Poland's much more complex and interesting than I had originally imagined. I'm going to use this place as a way to talk a bit about that. And if that interests you, please follow.
And this is what Michael is saying about the project and what he learned from it.
One of the more interesting projects for me that I've been doing recently is I've decided that I wanted to go on social media. So I've started a kind of social media presence. I started with TikTok and I thought, okay, I really want to speak to Jews in Canada or America about my experience of Poland because I think it'd be interesting for them. As a Jewish person, I become a good filter. And I started. And I very quickly realized that actually, it would be very interesting for Polish people. And I started to get a lot of followers from Polish people. And I had about 5,500 followers now on TikTok. And then I opened a YouTube for longer form content, and I'm close to 5,000 subscribers also on YouTube. And this is just in a few months. And also now my Instagram is growing. I didn't expect it to, but I'm at like 3,000 on Instagram. And basically, it's been amazing because I've learned so much about Poland through being on social media because people are really engaged with the fact that I'm this Jewish guy with my history, which is a Holocaust history, who grew up in Canada, who's moved to Poland, who likes Poland. And I'm so rare for Polish people that they love hearing what I've got to say. And sometimes they love fighting with me too. But it's been amazing in terms of also an exchange because, you know, I don't know who or why people get into commenting on social media. I've never been like an avid commenter, but I just get like thousands of comments from people from all over Poland. I have one little video I made on TikTok the other day. It's got 500,000 views with like 1,000 comments. And within all of the context of these comments, I've just learned also so much about Poland that I've never understood. But I also think the content is quite interesting. And I think people would be engaged in it because I'm really talking about contemporary Poland a lot. I also talk about politics through my lens. Some of it is comedy, but a lot of it is just sort of really putting out content through my lens as a Jewish person about Poland because I didn't feel like anyone else was talking about it. You get sometimes really stupid comments and some really bad anti-Semitic comments, but also often, particularly on YouTube, people really taking the time to share information with me or, you know, because I'll sometimes ask questions because I really want to be educated. But what I've really learned is that there is resentment towards Jewish people in Poland because I think from a Polish perspective, it was worse for the Jews, but it was very bad for Polish people as well. There, you know, between 2 and 3 million Polish people were killed, which is a lot of people, and comparable in numbers. Now it just so happens that it ended up being 90% of the Jews were killed and only 10% of the Poles because there was not as many Jews. And so the devastation towards Jewish culture is much greater than it was towards Poland. But, you know, but after the war, the world gave so much sympathy to Jewish people. We got Israel and also the stories that are told. The reparations that are offered to Jewish people from Germany, the education in Germany and the world in and around Polish suffering. What did the Poles get? 40 years of communism, A, and then after communism, what did they get? Did people start to focus on Polish tragedy? Did anyone have sympathy for Polish people? No, they got neighbors by gross.
They got Pokłosie, the film Aftermath. More recently, Wesela Dwa by Smarzowski. There's people who are really just like going after Polish people for the bad things that they did during the war. And it's not that none of these things are true, but I think that in the world, this becomes sort of the focus of Poland. Whereas, you know, Polish people really did suffer. They lost a lot. They fought in the Polish underground. There were it's estimated that between 500,000 to 1 million people were directly and indirectly responsible for trying to help save Jews. And this is not the conversation that the world's having about Poland. So I think, you know, whereas Jews, you know, kind of have a monopoly on the World War II sympathy, and there's resentment. And I understand that, like, no one's got time for Polish trauma. They have a lot of time for Jewish trauma. And so I think one of the things I've actually been trying to do through social media and through the learning is to sort of then, like, feed back in some of my content about it, about Polish trauma, about the Polish reality, trying to encourage an empathy for what the Polish reality was. Because I think there's a good argument for the Poles deserving more. Does that mean they should resent Jews? I don't think they should. The Jews didn't choose what happened to them. And after the war, Jews weren't suffering under communism. So there was a lot of energy by Jewish people to tell their story. And there continues to be. But I do think that it's important for the world and for Jewish people to find deeper empathetic pathways in relationship to non-Jewish Polish people. It was complicated. I didn't really truly understand that resentment. Not only that, but also, you know, the Poles were effed over by everyone, by the Allies. They were just sort of left to sort of deal with their own and, you know, got really slaughtered. And, you know, they didn't give up Jews. It's just, it's unfair. It's not fair to Polish people. The war was just unfair to everybody. But it's complicated trying to understand, as a Jewish person, trying to tell Polish-Jewish stories, how to do that in a way that really takes everyone's trauma into consideration, which is hard, because the Jews have gotten a lot of space for their trauma, and I don't think the Poles have.
Thank you so much, Michael, and I wish you well. Well, happy everything. Happy life in Poland, wonderful premiere of your show in Teatr Stary, which is fabulous that you're going to be staging there.
Yeah, it's cool. And Anna Dinna is in it. Yes. Right?
She is a legend.
Yeah.
And a wonderful person.
Yeah.
You know, and an activist. And she is a very special person. Thank you so much, Michael.
The great news is that since we talked in Kraków, Michael's play, Schron Przeciwczasowy, starring iconic Anna Dymna, had opened in the legendary Stary Theater in Kraków. On Polcast website, mypolcast.com, we have all the links and some nice images for you in the description of the episode. Polcast is not just this podcast. If you're interested in what's written about Poland in English, online articles published in many countries by many media outlets, they are posted on Polcast Facebook. Unfortunately, they're not visible to Canadian Facebook users due to Canada's Bill C-18. The bill requires big tech companies, Meta and Google, to compensate media organizations if they want to continue to host Canadian news content on their platforms. As a response, Meta, the owner of Facebook, blocked Canadians from posting and seeing news links. So you can see those links only if you view them from outside Canada, for example, from the US or Poland. Let me take this opportunity to thank all podcast listeners and our kind donors. I love you all. For a lot of additional information, multimedia links, please visit podcast website at mypodcast.com. And while you're there, please share your comments, your reactions, and you can suggest ideas as well. If you like what you heard, please share it with your friends. And don't forget to rate this episode on your favorite podcast app. And I will leave you with one of Michael Rubenfeld's TikTok videos, here, of course, in its audio form, which I think sums up his attitude to Poland. This one is his response to another one, a viral one he had done about the Polish anthem. You can find that one on his TikTok channel. The link is on our website, mypolkas.com, episode 97. Take a listen. And stay tuned for my next podcast, episode 98, coming soon.
Why do Polish people think that I hate Poland? People have been getting upset at some of my videos. Well, one video in particular about the national anthem. And I understand why people are upset about it. I think I've received about 1,000 comments, people trying to either explain it to me or telling me that Hitler should have finished what he started. Actually, I am a Polish person. My family lived in Poland for hundreds of years. They didn't choose to be mostly exterminated, but that's what happened. And then they ended up moving to Canada. Well, those who survived. And then I moved back to my country. Now, granted, my family didn't live here from 1946 to the day that I moved here, but that doesn't mean that I'm not Polish. Even if you want to believe that, I have a Polish passport, and not because I applied for my citizenship, but because I was confirmed as having always been a Polish person since birth. Granted, I don't speak the Polish language the way that I wish I did. And that's not my fault. It's because of the Holocaust. And yeah, I grew up in Canada, a country where we make fun of things that we love. It's an American thing as well. There's a show called The Daily Show that some of you might have heard of. It was started by a Jewish American named Jon Stewart, and the whole show revolved around taking the piss out of America. Now, you might be saying, oh, but he's an American, so he can do it. Well, I'm Polish. I've lived here for close to 10 years. I feel that I've got every right to make fun of my country as anyone else. Trevor Noah, for example, was born in South Africa, and he moved to America, and he took over The Daily Show after Jon Stewart, and he also made fun of America for a living. When I make fun of Poland, it's because I'm pointing out things that I believe are funny, and a lot of people think that the way that I do it is funny. Granted, not everyone does, and that's okay. You have the right to not think that I'm funny. But if you think that I hate Poland because I like to make fun of it sometimes, then you're wrong. If I hated Poland, I wouldn't be living here. I'd have stayed in Canada. I wouldn't also make videos and tell people about what a great country I think Poland is, because I do think that this is a great country. Anytime that I make fun of it, it's out of love. And if you don't feel that love, it's okay. We don't have to date. You can reject me. I'm comfortable with that. But if you think that I don't love you, you're wrong. I do, even if you don't love me back.